This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Hi, Jason Gipps, Joy Production Manager. It's Radiothon time. We still need Joy and we need your support. If you appreciate our free podcast service, our voice for the LGBTI community globally, and the volunteers that make our service possible, please sign up, renew your Joy membership, or make a tax-deductible donation before June 30 to keep our service possible. You may win a prize. Head to joy.org.au and click on either the Become a Member or Donate tabs to support us. If you appreciate our podcast service, let us know in the comments section when making your donation. Joy Podcasts, where you want them, when you want them, at joy.org.au and on iTunes.
Hi, I'm John Oliver, member number one. You're listening to Joy 94.9.
Hello and welcome to Been There, Done That on Joy 94.9. It's lovely to have you with us on this celebratory broadcast. I've got a new set of headphones.
Lucky you.
Oh, that was a squeaky voice of Gordon. Hello, Gordon.
Hello, Chris.
And the silence was from?
From Phil, who doesn't have new headphones. I've got a new microphone stand.
Oh, well, look, I'm just here with the usual. I'm going to get jealous.
That's fun. And can we thank the boys in the band who are just fading away now? But they get that song right every week.
Do they?
They do.
That's very good, isn't it?
Never heard a mess up.
No, I will.
I don't like the lyrics, but anyway.
Yeah, never mind.
Been There, Done It is Joy's history program. Well, we've made it that way because we seem to have discovered a little niche of interesting people, interesting stories, stories that fit our intention of breaking down barriers, of creating a comfort zone, of creating stories that move us to be better and wiser than we already are.
And there are a lot of stories to tell about our community too, which has a lot of very interesting people who have done great work and done wonderful, wonderful things. So it's nice to sort of mention them from time to time as well.
Oh, definitely. We are pioneers of our own kind and we can learn from others. And the pioneers needn't necessarily be older.
But we've been around forever. Well, a lot of people are just discovering us now, but the gay community has been around. Well, we're in the Bible.
Well, we've been mentioned in the Bible for 4,000 years ago or something.
We must have been fairly popular to get in that book.
Oh, yes, I think so. I think all things considered, we are mentioned in lots of places, but sometimes very nicely and sometimes not very nicely. And there's a bit of a controversy going on about not very nicely talking about us in the papers.
There was a TV program over the weekend about religions and the role of God and God versus science and these sorts of things. It was an interesting program where they paralleled all the major religions of the world and there was so much in common.
Yeah, well, most religions have a huge basic commonality, but then they vary off into little sort of segments and things.
You know? Like specialty programs on Joy.
Yes, that's
we
right.
We start on the gay base and end up some people talk about their pets and yeah, others exactly. Talk footy.
Talk about
religion.
Football.
Well, before you get on to football, religion only exists because man is the only animal that can ask the question why.
That's probably true.
So, other men had to come up with an answer as to why we're here, what are we doing here, where did we come from.
So they
dogs don't
religion.
Care.
No.
Cats don't care.
Yeah, well, they one of the things that I read about was the fact that they started this business about an afterlife because they thought we were higher intelligence animals than the animals that we, the dogs and cats and cows and everything.
Yeah, lucky we haven't disproved that.
Yeah, that's true. Anyhow, we were talking about football just a second ago.
Well, we were trying to, but
you tried to get us onto your path.
Oh, it wasn't my path. It was the path of the great walk to the MCG on Saturday evening to watch the Dreamtime match. And there were thousands of people walked from the city to the MCG, including the governor. I saw her on the telly and the prime minister and our premier and the leader of the opposition in both cases, state and federal.
Yeah.
And they all walked to the MCG to watch the Dream game.
Silly people, they could have got off the train at Richmond. It's a much shorter walk. No TV cameras, though.
Yeah, but it's part of the thing that the Essendon player that walked from here.
Michael Long,
yeah. It's a sort of a memory of that the walk that he did to gain recognition for Aboriginal people.
Such a long walk, and a lot of people are still walking.
Well, I got very annoyed. I was getting rather annoyed with the conversation that was going on the television on Friday evening about the Uluru. And I was sitting there screaming at the television set saying, well, we'll have to look into this and we've got to do this and that and the other. I was saying, get it done. You've had 50 bloody years, you know.
Well,
get something done now.
Yes. Well, they're finally facing up to the fact. Oh, all those fifths.
Watch those F words, please.
Yes.
The constitutional alteration mightn't be the best tool.
They don't want a constitutional thing. They want the treaty.
They're really locking into the concept of treaty.
Yeah.
And of course, with any of these changes, it's not a matter of enforcing change. It's like the 67 thing was. It was embraced by everybody.
Yeah, but you've got to have...
And that's bringing the crowd with you. And that's what they're doing now, is warming up the conversation and knocking down the skittles for the things that, no, we you know you can't do it that way. Okay, what can we do?
Well, I would like to see it happen before I leave this mortal coil. And it's been 50 years since they had the referendum and nothing much has been done. I'm sorry, I just don't think that that's fair. Not at all.
The Indigenous Round in the AFL, was it really put there for prowess in football? Were there any underlying reasons for it there? Was it a pride match of pride?
But Indigenous pride, I would say, think you'd say, because it recognises the ability. And of course, Australian rules football is apparently... comes from an Aboriginal game.
Well,
that they used to kick around a possum skin stuffed with
possum.
What's name? Not with possum. No, they
hear a little squeak in every goal,
and they would kick that around, you know, as a like a ball game.
Yeah.
And of course, the Australian rules came along, and they sort of thought, okay, this looks like a good idea. And another thing about Australian rules football, not many people know, but I did mention it last week. Last Wednesday was the anniversary of the codifying of Australian rules football in 1858, which was years before they codified any other football game. We led the thing over soccer and rugby, the rugby games and all the rest of it. They never had the rules.
No.
But Australia was the first one to do it.
And it's interesting, too, that the rules of Aussie footy, we'll call it, are being refined and refined and refined from match to match, in effect.
Which is a bit difficult for people to sort of come to grips with in lots of cases when they change the rules to some of these things.
That's the role of the umpire.
Yeah, but I tell you one thing that they did have in the Age on Saturday was a map of Australia showing all the Indigenous players where they came from and which sides they were playing for.
Mm.
It was a very, very interesting map. And there seemed to be a lot of people, a lot of Indigenous players, and they were everywhere. And they came from Central Australia, from Queensland, from Victoria, everywhere. And they had the names and they showed they had a line going to where they came from. A lot of people come from the Northern Territory, up in the Tiwi Islands and in Central Australia as well. Mm. It was very, very interesting. So I don't think Australian rules football would be half as exciting if it didn't have the Aboriginal players, because they are just so wonderful to watch.
They are. They're terrific.
Absolutely wonderful to watch. They just seem to have that. They have another vision or something or other. They just know where the bloke's going to be.
Well, they're light on their feet.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And they fly.
Really great stuff.
And it's a good chance for ignorant city folk to actually see what the population of Australia is made of.
Yes, exactly.
Because until we had Aboriginals in sport, if you'd lived out in the eastern suburbs, they were just something that you read about.
Yes, that's right.
You'd never see one.
And, of course,
they're people.
We've had Indigenous people in other sports as well. You've got hockey with... Oh, now I'm going to get... Get me names.
Right, I'll do tennis with Yvonne Goolagong.
Yvonne Goolagong, yeah. And
Crawley.
Nova Paris.
Yes.
Nova Paris, yes. It was, yes.
Is that who you were thinking of?
Yeah, that's who I was thinking of, as a hockey player.
Paris Hilton has done nothing for sport.
Yes, exactly right.
Except for your target.
Oh. I don't think you should even mention the two words, two names together. Like, one's a very intelligent lady and the other one just sort of ponces around.
But I've heard a lot of people have booked into the Paris Hilton. In France.
In France, oh, yes.
But wasn't it interesting to see that little bit of a report of the silos at Shepparton?
No, they weren't silos. They're painted on the sides of buildings in an alleyway. There's a wide alleyway in Shepparton.
Oh, 9 metre.
Yeah, and they're 9 metre high buildings. And they put the Aboriginal pastor, Sir Douglas Nichols.
That's right.
And then
William Cooper.
William Cooper, yeah. I never heard of William Cooper before I read the article about him. He got very upset when with Kristallnacht in the Second World War and with the Nazis doing everything, and he took a petition to the German embassy here in Australia protesting about what they had done.
Wow.
So a very brave man, actually, for that time of the year, that time of the thing, you know.
But I understand that the murals are first of many that's going to be, because they've got actually an Aboriginal street art project.
That's right, yes. And the next two paintings that are going up are going to be Aboriginal women leaders, and there's been a lot of them. As one of the ladies that's on the thing, she said, "I'm glad that somebody else is picking who they've got to put up there." She said, "There are so many that you could choose from," which is true too, because the women seem to lead a lot of the movements in the Aboriginal community, which is wonderful. They really know what to do.
They certainly do. You're with Gordon, Phil and Chris. Been there, done that. Stay tuned, because coming up, we'll be talking about Leather Pride. And how that features in the gay community.
Hugely.
Stop that.
Hugely in lots of cases, I'm sure.
We've got Guy Sebastian singing for us. Mind on You, here on Joy.
There's two empty glasses on the mattress, bottle gone. In this broke down palace, we got Savage 101.
Melbourne's lovable radio station, Joy 94.9.
You're with Gordon, Phil and Chris. Been there, done that on Joy 94.9.
You mentioned just before about Leather Pride.
Flags are symbols of identity and are highly meaningful to the people and communities they represent. As we know, the rainbow flag is very symbolic to the entire GLBTI community. The leather community is their own flag. It was designed by Tony DeBlaise, and he presented his design at the International Mr. Leather event in Chicago on the 28th of May 1989. It was quickly adopted by the gay leather community. The flag is composed of 9 horizontal stripes of equal width from the top, and from the bottom the stripes alternate black and royal blue, and the centre stripe is white. In the upper left quadrant of the flag is a large red heart. Sometimes that's actually replaced with a bear footprint to indicate the bear community, which is another subculture of the gay community, who've been also criticised for not being gay because they're bulky, hairy boys.
And if you've never seen a leather pride flag or a bear flag, go to Pride March.
Leather is a subset of the gay community. There are a few people in the community who have the pride in their section of the gay community.
Would you call us a diverse community?
Oh, what a good expression, Gordon. Thank you for
it's
that.
It's better than perverse community, which we're often accused of.
Yeah, that's right. But leather is it's one of those things that you are attracted to or you don't bother with.
Well, it doesn't
specifically
matter.
Is it a gay thing? Is there a straight...
No, there's
leather
a straight
fetish.
Leather scene as well, apparently.
Okay.
Yeah,
they all are under the same flag. So it's identification and connection with this subculture.
Of leather, of the smell of leather and the way it works and the way that the harnesses and all the rest of it. So some of the men, when they're really dressed up with the leather, they look rather cute and very butch-looking.
It's quite the opposite of how the gay community has been considered as being a bit femme or girly. And then here's there's this subgroup within the gay community, same-sex attracted, and they have decided that they'll boldly masculinise their appearance and behaviour because it fits their concepts.
Yeah, well, this is right. There's a huge cost of everything.
Leather, it's not drag.
No, it's not drag, but leather is a very expensive product. So it's not a cheap thing to go into. I know in the gay community they have Mr. Leather competitions for Victoria, and then they have the Mr. Leather Australia, which is a very big thing in the community. They do have their own hotel here in Victoria where they go to too.
The Laird.
The Laird.
If you had a soap fetish, would you go to a lather bar?
Well done. Well done.
I wonder about
You do wonder about things, don't you, in an odd sort of way.
Yes.
Yes.
My own little planet.
Well, you would perhaps be one of those places where they flood the room with foam. You'd be in a lather bar.
That's a disco lather bar. And we had some friends in town recently called the Village People. And in the, late 70s, they really helped show how diverse our community is by having a leather man and a policeman and an Indian and all these various, not socioeconomic groups.
Like subsets of the, which could have been subsets of our community because the man that formed the Village People, of course, was a gay man himself.
Oh, yeah.
Mm. Not all the singers were gay.
No, not saying the singers. Yeah. I said the man that formed them, that got them all together. He was in a gay bar and he saw something.
But that would have been the first time I'd ever seen a leather character. And
you would have been very young then.
In my teens.
Were you? Oh, right.
So I was still had lots to learn, but wouldn't have ever told you. Because especially when you're 17, you actually know everything.
Yeah.
Oh. And you're never wrong, and you can't die.
Yes, that's true, too.
Try talking to them.
And one by one, all those...
things become lies.
Yes.
And you grow up.
A reality is not as you thought it was.
But hence the song, what is it, I wish I knew what I know now. When I was younger.
Yes, that's right, yeah.
But it's very hard to say that.
The thing with the Gay Leather Pride, they didn't actually start until about 1940. They came in 40s, apparently.
It's likely that it grew out of the post-World War II biker culture.
Well, look at the, what's name, when they rode that, the motorbikes, it was the, what was that called? That
Easy Rider.
Easy Rider, yeah.
They were the big handlebars.
Yeah, and they did Easy Rider. And then you had, what's name, wore Marlon Brando jacket, you know, which was leather with
James Dean.
We used to sell lots of those when I was working in the disposals business.
Exactly. And that's where it was a sort of World War II leftovers.
Yeah, that's right. They were great jackets for when you ride a motorbike because they had a flap that was inside and then the other one came across and zipped up so that you had a double thickness of leather on your chest so you didn't ever got cold in the chest.
And when you fall off, your leather is left on the road instead of your skin.
That's right, yes. Yeah.
So it has advantages.
And now it's a permanent part of our culture, it would seem. It's not actually a place for young guys. I think it's, as you suggest, Phil, that once you've reached a little bit more of a mature position in your coming out, that you can cope with the concepts of being in a bar with these big bulky guys.
Now, another person that was very, very involved or seemed to be involved in the leather scene was Tom of Finland.
Oh, no.
Because some of his cartoon characters, or they were not cartoons, of course, although I suppose they were because nobody could ever be built like some of those things, that the men that he drew, they were often in leather gear and they had thing. And Tom of Finland is having a birthday this week.
His was on the 8th of May. The 8th of May, 1920, he was born. He's already left this world, but what a legacy he left behind because he was pretty good with black and white pen. And these lads that he caricatured were overdeveloped in lots of ways.
Oh, every way.
I think exaggerated is probably a more accurate term. We're talking about disproportional cartoon.
But he often had them in leather pants or leather...
Or out of them.
Or what have you, yeah. And he became very, very famous, of course. And there's a museum to Tom of Finland, I think, in Finland, in Helsinki.
Who'd have thunk? Of all the places to put Tom of Finland, put him in Germany, see how he goes.
They'd be right there too.
Oh, yes, definitely. But it's interesting that the motorcycle riders, even in this day and age, are still adopting what I'll call the style set from the 1940s.
Yeah, the early 50s, I would have said, would have been probably the more...
Even the naughty clubs. When I say naughty, I mean that the criminal element that goes around in motorbike clubs is dressed in leather with labels on their shirts.
But they wear a lot of denim rather than leather.
They have identified themselves as well. But I'm sure our gay motorbike clubs, there would never be a scuff mark on any of the leather.
Now dare you. How very dare you. Yeah, but the of course, there's a, not only does it appeal to the men, it also appeals to women. There are a lot of women that are into leather, wearing leather as well, straight and gay.
Well, there's a lot that are into motorbikes, but no, not so much leather in that sense.
But it's the wearing of the leather that makes them feel better or something or other.
Well, it's a uniform, isn't it?
Yeah.
It identifies them.
No, but actually having bovine leather against your naked skin is quite a comfortable feeling because it's so flexible, it moves like a second skin. Time for a bit of music, I think, according to the clock. Let's hear Bruno Mars with his latest. You're on Joy.
Great shows, great topics, great radio. Joy 94.9.
You're with Chris, Phil and Gordon. Been there, done that. Joy 94.9. Thanks very much for being with us.
Yes.
And thanks for your feedbacks.
Yes.
Which you can give to us on the email machine.
Yes.
And you type in when it says...
Two.
I was trying to think what it actually said. There is a good mental blank.
Good block out, wasn't it?
Yes, you can address the email to beenthere@joy.org.au and that will find us.
We can check it the following day if it comes through.
Yes.
Yeah. And we can talk about whatever you want to talk about. You can ask us a question.
You can ask requests, all of which will be denied.
If you want to know something about something that you don't know about,
Don't ask us.
We will investigate it for you, which is a good way to do things.
We'll just go and Google them.
Oh, right. Okay.
In our little history program today, we're going to be talking about some people who are out and loud and proud. And you wonder, well, where is the great big mallet that we can hit them with to make them shut up and get back in their little boxes?
Don't ever do that.
No. We're out. We're not going back in.
That's exactly right. I have no intention of going back in behind that closet and looking for Narnia.
As Homer Simpson said about the Mustache Day Parade.
What's that?
We're here, we're queer, get used to it.
Yeah, that's Vintage Men's, we're here, we're queer. Something is, I can't remember the last of it, but anyhow.
It's like, we're so old, we're here, we can't hear, but we're queer.
Yeah, that's something like that.
What was that again?
Hello. Hello.
Graham Kennedy was a name within Australian TV and radio, and especially here in Melbourne. And he was very out and very loud and naughty and funny, and is accepted by most people and loved by most people as well.
But he never actually came out until he was well retired. You know, he never ever came out while he was on television or anything like that.
But
by the way he carried on, you did begin to wonder.
You didn't need to. I mean, the little neon sign was flashing around him.
The gaydar was just flashing on and off all the time.
Didn't they try to marry him off to Lana Cantrell?
Lana Cantrell, that's right.
Well,
yes.
She was of our persuasion as well.
That's right, yes.
And see, we never talked about these subjects at home, but when that topic was in the news, I'm not sure if it was mum or dad, but the comment was, well, that's never going to work, is it? And I was too young to know what they were talking about.
She still works. She works in New York still. She's a lawyer for artists. She's an artist lawyer.
Because she started out her public life as a singer.
She was a singer. Great voice.
Great voice.
Went to America. Was very popular and part of the lesbian community over there as well. And she also then studied law. She decided she would study law and she became a solicitor over there, a lawyer, whatever they call them, an attorney or whatever. And she specializes in artists' law about contracts and copyright things.
Terrific. And why are we talking about Graham Kennedy at this particular time? We're talking because he, although he was born on the 15th of February 1934, he died on the 25th of May 2005 in not particularly pleasant circumstances.
No, no.
He declined quite badly, and yep. he was in an oldies home and became befuddled, I think.
Yep, and they had but his funeral was very, very well attended by all the luminaries of the time who went to pay tribute to the man that really gave them he gave so many people a start on television too, with the people that he used to put up onto the program onto In Melbourne Tonight.
He pushed the barriers.
He went beyond the barrier sometimes.
He exceeded the limits of what was accepted TV behaviour.
He pushed the Packers.
Oh, yes.
They didn't like him at the end.
Yeah, but the funny part about it, if he was doing an advert for something, he would absolutely destroy the product. But it didn't matter. The people that he was destroying the product for said, that's great, because their sales just boomed.
Well, it was name-dropping.
Yeah, he's just amazing.
He said they'd pay for 30 seconds and get 5 minutes.
That's right, yeah.
Because he'd just do anything he could to drag it out.
That's right, yeah.
And most of it was just silly slapstick funniness.
Yeah, and one of his sayings is still used around the place as well, too. It's a joke, Joyce.
Oh, right, yes, that's where it came from.
That's where it comes from, a skit that he used to do with
Rosie
Sturgis. And they were two old people, and he'd be sitting there, he'd have a bald wig on and all the rest of it, and he'd say, it's a joke, Joyce. And that's where the saying comes from.
But he had a limited repertoire, because that character, he would frequently be eating spaghetti. And... I don't know if it was almost every week, but there'd be a spit take involved where spaghetti would go flying everywhere.
Either that or the bowl went somewhere.
Yeah. Yeah. We don't have television like this anymore. We need that.
We need it. Yes.
Well, if you can't get it on TV, you can probably get it on YouTube. Or whatever it is
on the computer world. Yes, I never have time to watch those things, I'm afraid.
I'm afraid that if I got opened one up, I would have to keep watching and watching and watching and just...
There's only so many cats playing piano you can watch.
Oh, no, I meant grabs off of GTV9's
From their archives.
Show with Bert Newt.
With Bert, yes. Bert's getting on these days too.
And sadly, a lot of those shows wouldn't exist because they were live.
Well, that's right.
They didn't have recording in the early TV days. They didn't have videotape.
No. So you mean they actually had to go live to air?
Live to air.
And they couldn't bleep out anything?
No.
Oh, how risky is that? It's almost like us doing radio.
But see, this was the 60s, so there weren't many people trying to break the rules.
No.
Graham was probably the one who...
He didn't break them. Yeah.
He was trying to get fired, really.
Yeah, yeah. Well,
he was trying to get out of his contract.
Yeah, well, that's only at the
you
end,
do that
towards the end.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah. But his Blankety Blanks show, when he was on Blankety Blanks, God, that was so funny.
He was naughty.
He was very
all innuendo.
Double entendre, actually.
Yes.
It could have been, are you being served? Just at a different location.
Someone else was sort of out loud and proud. Born on the 25th of May, 1959.
He's young.
Yeah. Well, he is young. Julian Clary.
Hmm.
The UK comedian. Quite camp. Quite naughty. He liked a little bit of leather sometimes. But he had Fanny the Wonder Dog.
That's right. Yeah. Didn't he call himself the Prince of Mints?
Oh, something like that. He was so over the top as being gay that... Hmm. In fact, he stereotyped us in some ways that was not appreciated by some people.
But he was very quiet off stage. I met him, and he was very quiet. Hardly said a word.
There's a lot of comedians that be like that.
Yeah.
They've got their stage persona.
It was one of his, the big chap that was his on stage with him when he did his stage shows.
Huge Shelley,
yeah, that's right. Huge was the one that used to carry on. He was the one that was really the life and soul of any party, yeah. I met him back in the 90s or something or other, back down at the Positive Living Centre. He came down there.
You've been around, Gordon.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Been around.
And what were they doing at
PLC? He was performing at the Hermage or the Princess or something or other. And, of course, being gay, and he knew about the Positive Living Centre and the way that Australia was handling the AIDS crisis, he came down. He donated quite a bit of money to the thing, and they were able to buy a great big soft leather lounge suite for the members to sit in, you know, and he was very, very generous. But as I said, you would be introduced to him and he'd sort of say, oh, hello, how are you? And that would be about as all he'd say. But, Hugh Jelly would go on and carry on. Yeah. It was a very, very nice man. Mm.
You're with Phil, Gordon and Chris. Been there, done that. But here is Isaiah Firebrace on Joy.
I can tell by your eyes you want more than this. But can we be much more beyond these sheets? No, I don't want to mess with your head. But my love, it's hard to...
A diverse sound for a diverse crowd. Joy 94.9.
You're with Gordon, Chris and Phil. Been there, done that. Joy 94.9. On the home stretch, because the clock is ticking over, and I'd like to mention at this particular point of time, someone else who is out loud and proud.
Very loud, very proud.
And who has left his mark on musical theatre and some of these other things for quite a few years now. We're talking about Harvey Fierstein, the US author and actor and writer. Who do we know him, or what do we know him from?
Well, you could start with Torch Song Trilogy, which he wrote and starred in.
Not many of our people would know
that. On the Broadway. And then Tony Sheldon played the part here in Melbourne at the National Theatre.
Yeah.
And that had a huge season down there. They did bring it back a couple of times. It's a very, very interesting play about one. It's a one-person play, and he's on stage for the whole night with a break, of course, an interval. But it's all about his life in America, in New York, as a gay man.
Right.
And it's a very, very interesting play.
Portrait of his own life?
I think it was the portrait of Harvey Fierstein's own life, yeah. I think he wrote it about himself, basically, because he starred in it, wrote it and starred in it, yeah. But it's a brilliant play. It's very, very clever.
And it would have reflected the social environment in which he found himself.
Yeah.
And obviously pre-Stonewall or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
So it would have been a very bold coming out story.
Yeah, I tell you what, watching them when Tony Sheldon did the part, I tell you what, he must have been absolutely worn out at the end of every performance or be on such a high that he wouldn't be able to go to sleep for hours. You know, it was a brilliant, brilliant play. But he also wrote the book for La Cage aux Folles.
Oh, right, yeah.
The musical, he wrote that from the original French film, which was in black and white, which was no music. It was just called La Cage aux Folles, and it was the story of the two men and the son getting married and all the rest of it.
The
but
relationship.
He's done a lot. He did Kinky Boots.
Yeah, he wrote Kinky Boots as well.
Oh, the modern one.
Yeah, he wrote the story to Kinky Boots, and Cyndi Lauper wrote the music. And that got Tony Awards on Broadway. He's won so many Tony Awards, it's not funny, for his shows. He won a Tony for the book of La Cage aux Folles. He won Tony Awards for Torch Song Trilogy.
He was in Mrs. Doubtfire.
Yes, he was.
Did Robin Williams make up to turn him into Mrs. Doubtfire? And he's got that gravelly, unique voice.
Yeah.
And the highlight of his career, I have to say, was playing a character called Carl on The Simpsons. Carl was Homer's assistant. He got him promoted to senior management, and Homer had enough money to buy a bottle of hair treatment to stop his bald head. And that gave him extra success, got all the way to the top until Bart spilt the bottle in the carpet.
What happened?
And it all collapsed from there. Actually, Mr. Smithers discovered that Homer had claimed it on the company's health insurance.
Oh, no.
And that put the flags up and the battle was on. And poor Carl, who didn't disguise his voice at all, it was Harvey Fierstein, he had to leave.
The gravelly voice.
And Homer, you see at the end, Homer's, it looks like he's reading a note, and you hear Harvey's voice, you know, off screen, you know, as if it's Homer reading it. And then the camera pans back. And it's Carl standing next to Homer reading his note.
Gorgeous. No, it's wonderful that we've got these examples over 20, 30, 40 years showing the development of the gay community and the general acceptance that these plays gender to the community. You need the examples out there to realise that you're not the only gay in the village, or that, in fact, what might be abnormal to some people, it really, in fact, is normal. Our lives are normal, boringly normal.
Yeah, it is too. We wake up in the morning, we get dressed, we go to work, we go, might go out and to have a drink after work or meet some friends after work, go home, go to bed, the whole life continues.
The fact is we don't all drive around in a bus called Priscilla.
Oh, don't we?
I don't. I've got a Jazz. It's a bit smaller.
I got in the bus this morning and I don't think it was called Priscilla, but it was full of teenage girls going to school.
Oh, and there right. was Gordon on the top with his long silver blowing in the wind.
Singing something from opera.
Yes.
I don't think. There's too many trees overgrown.
Look at the overhead wires and, what would you do with tram lines? That could be fatal.
They could be, yeah. That used to be the same with the when we had the Moomba Parade with all those big floats.
They had to be built to a height, didn't they?
To a certain height so they would get under the tram lines, yeah. Yeah.
Would have been more entertaining to watching them burn.
Or get
electrocuted.
Harvey Fierstein was talking about his US life. I understand, Gordon, that you might have actually spoken to Alan Hollinghurst from the UK.
Yes, I've spoken to Alan Hollinghurst when he wrote a brilliant novel about a family over a period of several generations and the way the older one was talking about the previous. It was a strange book because the second generation spoke about the first generation. Then it went on that the third generation spoke about the second generation, the fourth. It was very, very interesting the way it worked. And he's a very interesting man to talk to, too.
He's gay, but did he wrap that into his stories?
Oh, yes. All his stories had gay characters in them. The one that he had, he wrote The Swimming Pool Party, and he wrote... Oh, I forget the book that he wrote about the life in the Margaret Thatcher era, and the gay guy went to live in a family of Thatcher supporters, and what had happened there. Yeah.
Now, for those who don't know, Margaret Thatcher was sort of an extreme right winger.
Oh God, so far to the right.
Not a nice lady. Shut down the coal mines.
She shut down all the coal mining industry, and she shut down all sorts of things. And she was going down the gurgler, and she decided that she would go and fight the Argentinians in the Falklands War, and that re-established her as a tough lady, so they voted for her back again.
What do they call her? The Iron Maiden?
The Iron Lady.
George Negus interviewed her once, and he said, people are saying you're not doing something right. Yeah. I don't remember the quote. And she said, oh, who are these people? Name names, please.
Ooh.
She was that much of a brick wall for face.
Yes, if people have been saying these things about me, who are they? Name them.
Yes.
Otherwise, don't mention it. And they actually made a series of it on television, which was shown on the ABC.
Right.
It was very well done.
Alan Hollinghurst, poet. That's a very
poet and author.
Yeah, very old-fashioned way of writing.
He came out here for the Melbourne Writers' Festival one year, and because he was gay, we were able to get him to come in and have a chat. He came in here. He was in Joy, up in Studio One.
I'm a poet.
Yeah.
The one from Nantucket.
I had a chat with him for about 20 minutes, I suppose, and he then had to leave, and he went down to the ABC, and I listened to his bit on the ABC, and he got about 3 minutes.
Oh, just because you're a gas bag?
No, just because he was enjoying himself, I think. That was the thing.
He was with family.
Yeah, I had read the book and I knew what I was talking about. And
it was a safe space.
Yeah, and he loved it, yeah.
I understand that the village people, a couple of guys from that who were in the studios last week, they arrived for a 5-minute interview.
Stayed
for over an hour, not necessarily all on air, but once again they were in a safe space, a comfortable space, and
well, we're really non-threatening.
Well, of course we are.
We don't threaten anybody.
But we're a lot more flexible than commercial radio too.
Oh yeah, well of course they don't. We've got more time to sort of think about things and talk about things if we can. Mind you that you try to keep things so that they're current, but sometimes it just disappears off into other worlds.
And if a gay topic comes up, it's not taboo.
It's not taboo. No, you can talk about it anything they like. But I have to admit that I was watching the football show on the Offsiders on the ABC on the weekend.
Sunday morning
on the weekend. And they were talking about the controversy about Margaret Court.
Yep.
And should they rename the thing, the arena? I don't think they should because she is a great She was a great tennis player. She still holds the record for the most number of women's titles won. I think Venus Williams is still two behind her. You know, and Venus is getting older, so not to say that she's ever going to pass her. So Margaret was an absolute phenomenon on the tennis court. They were talking about that, and everyone on that panel said, we all, in this studio, we all support equal marriage. He said, so it's a bit of a thing when you get somebody that's in the sporting field that comes out like that. They were very, very supportive of equal marriage on that show, and I thought, well, good on you.
We could give her some more awards if she likes, like her favourite bigot of 2017. I'm sure that's an award somewhere.
She's allowed to speak. She's allowed to say what she thinks because that's the freedom of speech that we have here in Australia. But sometimes it doesn't sort of gel with the general public anyhow.
No.
You know, because like 72% is the latest, or was the latest thing I read, although I believe it's going up a bit.
The approval factor
for... The approval factor for equal marriage.
Mm. It is equal rights.
It is equal rights as well.
I tried to point out to News Court on the project last week that why is it okay to make people feel less accepted or less part of the community than anyone else? Mm. And she didn't have an answer for that.
Well, there is no answer.
And it was interesting, too, last week that in Taiwan they have introduced equal marriage
in
rights
Taiwan.
There.
Yeah. So there's another country. It's a little island, but, boy, there's a lot of people there. And they did it, and as I said a few weeks ago...
They'll never get accepted across the ditch into mainland China, will they?
No. Well, I think that would be very, very good for them because it would stop their population growth a little bit, I think, you know.
I'm not sure what you really mean, Gordon.
Well...
I think it might be time for us to go.
How many billion people are there in China at the moment?
That's right. Yeah. Well, you're doing your bit, yes, aren't you?
That's right. Well, that's what the...
You're taking one of the men out of the population.
Oh, well, I've taken one of the men out of the population. Yes, that's true.
I think he was out before you came along.
Yes, I think he was.
Lily Allen says, it's not fair, and we agree with
her. Agree when it comes to equal marriage.
We'll see you next week, so thanks for being with us. Bye for now.
Bye.
Oh, yes, you're on Joy. Been there, done that. Joy 94.9.
Oh, he treats me with respect. He says he loves me all the time. He calls me 15 times a day. He likes to make sure that I'm fine. You know I've never met a man who's made me feel quite so secure. He's not like all them other boys. They're all so dumb and immature. That's just one thing.
Thank you for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.